Representative Butler is testifying today, and so he will be joining us shortly. But until that time, he asked us to go ahead and proceed with the DAS IRMD budget. Mr. Latimer, would you like to continue?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm John Latimer, Director of the Information Resources Management Division of the Department of Administrative Services. And before I begin today, I'd like to correct a brain malfunction I had yesterday. My staff tells me that I said 70 million when I should have said 7.
I didn't notice.
Minor detail. When we were talking about savings from the consolidation of the network and from long-distance savings, and I was talking about the consolidation savings, I inadvertently said 70 million when I should have said 7 million. So I want that for the record.
Well, between friends, we'll hold you to 70 million.
And continue. That's what I was afraid of.
You've achieved the 4%, which makes us very, very happy on our reduction.
Well, you remember what F. Dirksen said, a million here and a million there. Pretty soon you got real money. You can say that about zeros, too. All right. Package number 340. This is provides permanent financing and limitation for three limited duration positions created last biennium. The first is a administrative specialist 2 for our state technology education program, and this is needed for program growth and workload increase tied directly to essentially reduction in state agency training budgets, and they're moving more and more to our training program. The second part of this package are two project management, two principal contributor threes for our project management office, and these are project managers. They're responsible for providing project management leadership for enterprise technology projects. This is in direct support of our Oregon Information Technology Strategy. The increased application of project management methodology has resulted in a higher percentage of successful IT projects, and we think that as we move forward, these are going to be very important to our strategy. So. Package number 341.
John, I have a question for you on this enhancement package in terms of training people. This is on a fee-for-service basis, so agencies are going to pay in?
Mr. Chair, it is. This is essentially a brokering service.
Okay.
We have staff in the technical education program and we have facilities for training. We actually have a room of desktops that people can use, and so they come in and we have instructors from both the private sector like IBM and others who provide training, and from Chemeketa Community College and from private consultants that do the training for us, and then the agencies pay for it on a per pupil basis.
Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. How specific would this training be in the sense that I would imagine that your brief description that some of the major agencies might be doing this themselves already?
Chair, Senator Devlin, in some cases they do, but as training budgets are being reduced, they're turning more and more to our program. This is special. This is really not what you would call general training. This is specialized technical training on a whole variety of subjects, all the way from how to use desktop software. It could be new clerical folks, all the way to how to program in Java or how to do project management, for example. We also have a new training program on business analysis, so that folks can learn how to do a proper business analysis before they enter into an IT project. There's a whole broad variety of programs or training.
Thank you. Please continue.
Package 341 is the continuation of our e-government program. This continues the existing web portal services and extends these services to other agencies for development of more integrated service offerings. It extends payment collection options to include automated clearinghouse, debit cards, and financial electronic data interchange options. Extends the functionality of electronic government services available to agencies. Supports ongoing maintenance and system software upgrades. And the funds are recovered through a statewide assessment.
This is the offsetting portion of Package 020, which is a reduction of that the 0103 levels of e-government. Is that right, John?
This is the package that carries forward the program as it is currently constituted.
This is the offsetting portion. This is the continuation of the $5.7 million reduction. This is the $1.92 million request for continuation.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Representative Patrick is recognized.
I just have a question on this particular program. Again, I think I asked earlier on who's coming on the e-government program, who's using the templates and those types of things, and you know,
okay.
are there potential savings in other departments that are going to be recognized as a result of the fact that we're going to part of the goal was to recognize some of those savings. So can DAS or BAM tell us if those savings have been culled out of other budgets?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Patridge, I do not believe there are any savings that have been called out. The program is not totally operational yet. We expect the final implementation of the platform for e-government to be at the end of June. We are, however, doing some credit card acceptance now. We have SecurePay established, and Secretary of State is using it for their business renewals and license renewals. The carrier division of ODOT is using it for credit card transactions, the Marine Board.
Just a follow-up. Is Package 341 more than the credit card pieces?
Yes.
Isn't this the portal, centralized portal, the templates and all those kind of things? And so I guess my question then is more to Cora and BAM. Have we been able to, part of the reason we made a large investment is to go back and then utilize these, you know, kind of the standardized forms, the meta tags, all those kinds of things, so we're not having individual HTML pages and everyone program their own thing. Have we been able to at least look at some savings or identify some of those savings in other agencies? Do you know, or maybe you can get back to us, Cora, on...
I can get back to you with some more detail, but Mr. Chair, Representative Patridge, I don't believe that on a statewide basis, as far as any generic direction going out to analysts or across agencies to call out specific savings has occurred. Now, on agencies that are farther along in the process, analysts may have been able to call out some savings there, and I'll have to get some information for you.
Mr. Chair, for the committee, I guess I'd like to have LFO take a look at that. I think we can talk with BAM and DAS and impute some kind of number. We're trying to encourage agencies to switch over and at the same time gain some savings efficiencies. So
certainly
I think we should probably look at the IT budgets of people that are out there in terms of what they're, you know, we saw so many packages for the last two biennia about web, they need to add an FTE for their web browsing, web services, all these kinds of things. Web pages and maintaining those. I'd like to go back through some of those and call out some of those savings, and hopefully we can begin to encourage them to begin the transfer from a financial disincentive as opposed to.
And if there are no recognized savings to date, then we need to be able to project where those will create the savings and create the opportunity for those various agencies to subscribe for those measured deliverables from this package to kind of equate that with the related to profit savings.
Mr. Chair, Representative Patridge, I think something else that you'll see, and I'll confirm this in what we bring back to you, but in the reductions that we've been going through for the last year, I think these are some of the areas that are falling, you know, what you will look for to be savings. I think those are also some of the things that have fallen out of the budget, you know, in the first few rounds. So you may not see additional savings here because we may have pulled them out already. So just an FYI, just to get that on the record, that we may have already seen some of them.
I guess my concern is we have another funds assessment that's going out to support kind of a core service. I just don't want it to be additive to the process. So thanks.
Mr. Chair, Representative Patridge, I think we also, and I think Cora is correct, a lot of these savings are really being already been winnowed out of budgets. What is also needs to be kept in mind is that this is providing a new utility for the citizens of Oregon. The portal itself will be much more useful because it'll be integrated so people can search through state agencies in a much easier fashion. Being able to use credit cards can actually cost money because depending on how you do it, you can incur a cost from the credit card company. So it's really, I think, in many ways providing more utility to the citizen as much as it's providing savings. But there will be, for example, with the content management program that will be part of that platform, there won't be the need for people to program HTML because it's part of that. You can actually do the content of the website in like Word, and then the program automatically puts it into the web. So you don't have to have HTML programmers. How many of those kind of people are out there? I don't know. So. And of course, that part of it won't be available until next biennium.
Alice, is that something that LFO can help us with in that regard?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it's something we are actively, agency by agency, aware of and trying to identify. I would agree with Cora, this may be some of the first to go in those reductions, but not all agencies were subject to those reductions, so I think it's incumbent upon us to look at them agency by agency. Yes, that's a long-winded way to say yes, I know.
Thank you very much, Dallas. I think in that regard, I'd hope that all of the Y2K programming issues were all, I mean, when we ramped up for that, that those have all been winnowed back out as well for the carryover there. I think we worked on that last in the 0103 budget, but just need to make sure that those folks all got finished up with their projects and moved on to other issues. Thank you.
This is package 390, and this is really the final consolidation of mail processing operations with the department's publishing and distribution operations. It clearly decreases duplication of services, transfers outgoing mail sorting operations, and transfers one position from revenue to the Department of Administrative Services. It includes maintenance costs for the relocated mail processing equipment, $84,000 for this coming biennium, and it's charged as a fee for service to the Department of Revenue. It's charged per piece of mail. Package 447 continuation of the electronic procurement project. This is funding to complete the redesign and automate procurement processes using the web-based technologies. We'll replace existing vendor information program launched in 1992, which is now considered technologically obsolete. The technology has advanced considerably since 1992, allowing more opportunities to streamline and enhance current processes for the benefit of both government and our business partners and the taxpayer. This was first approved as a 2001-03 package involved planning and development of a web-based bidder registration, noticing, and bid receipt system. This package represents phase two, automation and tracking of purchasing transactions, purchasing through online contracts and online vendor catalogs, enhanced capabilities, improved internal compliance, improved analysis capabilities, and integration of multiple back office systems.
President Patridge is recognized.
Where's the money coming? Where's the other funds coming from? Is this an assessment? Is this a...
This comes from the purchasing folks in PFSS. And COPs pay for the development.
Mr. Chair, Representative Patridge, the COP is the original funding source for the $3-point-something million that you see here. There's actually a debt service component in the PFSS budget, so this will be paid through the repayment stream will be coming.
So what was the amount of the COP?
I believe it's close to this 3.4 that you see here, and I can verify it.
That's been issued already?
Not this phase of it, I don't believe, no.
So how much have we spent on this procurement project so far?
Mr. Chair, Representative Patridge, I don't know. We'll have to get back to you on that.
I can look if you want to move on. I actually can look for you right now.
Dallas, did you have...
My recollection is there's been some planning, but this is actually where the rubber hits the road as far as implementation. So this is where you're going to see the bulk of the dollars. And I'm not sure. We didn't have a separate package for any of the planning, as I remember, in the past. But we did in the prior budget, but it was a small amount.
Just to go back to my other concern on the procurement side of what was going on in terms of our ability to go about looking at what's actually being procured through the various approved vendors. I'm interested if that's been included as part of the planning process. If not, I'm probably not inclined to support some kind of package that's just another purchasing system. I'd also like to know if we've explored that some of these vendors pay the cost of helping us put this procurement system up. A lot of vendors will help front the costs for doing this, especially if it creates an ease in their particular system and ordering, and we should be a large enough purchaser, I would imagine, that there might be some incentive to front the costs. Now, that maybe that's already been explored. I'm seeing a lot of head nods in the back, so I assume that that's been explored.
Okay, Mr. Chair, Members of Committee, Representative Patridge, we have a white paper. We'll do a white paper for you on this whole package. This is not an IRMD project. It's a project for a PFSS.
I understand that, but is PFSS somewhere else in DAS?
Yes.
So it's a DAS project. So I kind of look at you as a as a group. You're lumped in with the rest of them. I'm sorry, John.
That's fine.
Cora is the only one I consider to be outside the fold.
It's a wonderful lump. Am I up to 50?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay, this is package 450. And Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think Cora may have to help me with this one because this is going to become a technical adjustment, I believe, as we move into work session. But for us, as we develop our technology plan with Director Weeks and the governor, what I'll talk about is what we're proposing to the governor, and we hope to have decisions on this soon. And so, but it's not final yet. The first part of this package is our network consolidation and integration, and it executes our state enterprise network plan, reengineers and integrates 12 large data networks into a single, highly reliable, appropriately sized wide area network. Consolidated network will have higher and more uniform capacity, additional functionality, such as integration of voice and data, and will cost less to operate than the current combined costs for existing networks. It positions state government, we think, for successful deployment of electronically delivered government services. The next part of this proposal is a state technology lab, which would create a secure environment where concepts can be prototyped and tested and evaluated for application to the enterprise. It would be isolated from production systems. It would be a cooperative model that we would work with other state agencies, and including OSU, which has a technology lab and a teaching function. We would also bring in folks from the private sector to test some of their functionality in their wares, and they'd be encouraged to both participate and provide services and technology. The package provides a core technical staff needed to create and operate the lab.
Chairman Patridge is recognized.
Who is this? Where are the other funds coming from in this package? And what, I guess, you know, I thought we had a lot of capacity, too, with the data at the data center. I'm wondering why this can't be done at the data center, and if we're having agency staff who are prototyping various applications or service delivery systems, networks, whatever, why can't they prototype it at the general government data center? And then I just don't understand why we need more staff to do this. I mean, they're the ones who are ultimately going to run the program, so we're going to have some new set of staff prototype it and then move it over. Can someone explain the process?
Mr. Chair, Representative Patridge, let me see if I can explain it this way. First of all, the data center does not have excess capacity. In fact, we have problems in providing enough staffing for the data center and its operations as it is. The other more important thing is that this really separates. That's a production environment in the data center, and this separates that out as an isolated system. What we're trying to do is not just do this for our data center. It's allow other state agencies that have particular needs for the private sector to actually show us. What happens is the private sector goes into agencies with a great idea to help them solve a problem, whether they have that problem or not. We would like to have the opportunity to test those solutions before they actually go into production. And we spend a lot of money in a state agency or in our own agency to do the solution.
There was much debate about the data center last time. Have we had anyone outside look at the data center, see if we're utilizing it properly, see if it's what it needs to be during the recently? Or
Mr. Chairman, Representative Patridge, as part of our e-government program and part of the contract that we have with EDS to develop the e-government platform, in order to host that platform in the data center, part of what EDS has done has gone in and done an assessment of the data center in order to see whether or not it has the capacity and the ability to host that platform.
I'd like to take a look. Do we have access to those reports?
Mr. Chairman,
have you looked at those, Dal?
No, I haven't.
Okay. We'd be glad to give that to you.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Senator Devlin,
thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just looking at some of the supporting documents, I'm just trying to clarify something. This package was not part of the original agency request. This came about as part of the executive's review of the budget and the transitions team review of your department, right?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Devlin, that's correct. The packages, the original packages these were in, were denied originally in the budget, and they were all put together for review by the governor to decide how we were going to put together a technology package for Oregon State Government.
Just to follow up a little more on that, Chair Senator Devlin, Package 342 and Package 447, which you should still have narrative of in your packet, were not recommended Instead, we pulled the dollar amounts that were in those packages, a portion of the dollar amounts in those packages, out and put them into this package, which we're calling which we called a placeholder package, basically, at the time that we put it together. The idea was that the governor's transition team and the folks who were working to put the budget knew we wanted to invest some dollars here, but simply because of the time frame and putting the budget together, weren't certain that they knew where they wanted to invest those dollars and how, and wanted to be able to continue those conversations with IRMD. So we left the framework here knowing we would need to bring a technical adjustment to the table for you. So what you'll see will be items similar to what was in 342 and 447. The dollars will not be exactly the same. As a matter of fact, the dollars will not be this 3901. That was the placeholder amount that we had, but it will be something probably less than that. I don't want to set IRMD up for high expectations, but my understanding that it is working to be something less than that amount, and we'll also be considering whether or not, you'll see there are no positions included in this package, and yet if you look at the original two packages, there were positions there. So when we talk about the technical adjustment, we'll need to talk about whether FTE are needed, etc. So it's an odd-looking package at this point in time. We didn't want to simply say no, and yet we didn't have the detail. So this was the best that we could bring at that point in time.
With that in mind, Mr. Chair, I'd just like to see more detail before we go to work session and have a better understanding of what we're doing. It's always good to have a test lab, but a $4 million test lab seems awfully excessive in light of it. We could probably find an empty room for you here at the state capitol to use while we're out of session. You'd probably use this hearing room.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Patridge, while I agree with you that we need more detail, I don't think we propose a $4 million test lab. That's for the whole package.
I understand.
The test
Once you put the bells and whistles on it, we'll take a look at it.
Okay. The third part of this is to bring in some business systems analysts. In the last several years, the state has substantially improved its ability to manage IT projects through our project management methodology and quality assurance and oversight. What these disciplines do not do, however, is really do the upfront work, the business analysis, that asks the questions, is this really an appropriate project for technology? Is the proposed technology the appropriate technology? Does it meet the business needs of the agency or the process that's being automated? We have not been doing that business analysis. We have not been doing necessarily routine business cases either. What we would like to do then is add business analysis so we have the whole package. We have the business analysis up front. When there is a go on a project, we have project management. As the project is being operated and implemented, we have quality assurance to make sure that it's being done correctly. We feel that without that business analysis up front, we're starting out with a project that may not be the right project, and so you can manage it, but it may be going in the wrong direction. We feel that it's really important that we do this and really look at re-engineering at the get-go rather than finding out as we get into it that we must re-engineer later. One of the things that we've discovered in implementing our credit card process through the e-government program is that the agencies who want to use allow folks to use credit cards to buy their services or products all have very different business rules, business operations. What we would like to do is be able to talk to those agencies about changing those business rules so we're not recreating a new process every time we go into a new agency.
Representative Patrick? I think that that's well and good. I think if we're still talking about 450, I think that's well and good. I think, you know, that's what I said early on is we needed an agency to ask the whole if that's what you're going to flesh out in this, great. So take it. Give us something good. Sell us something good, John.
I'm selling.
All right.
Package number 499. This is the package that transfers the publishing and distribution function from procurement, fleet, and surplus services to the Information Resources Management Division. The transfer occurred operationally this last summer, and this package makes the necessary budget adjustments to move publishing distribution to our division. It transfers 142 positions and transfers the revenue and expenditure limitations to do that.
Representative Patrick.
Thank you. Were there any cost savings taken in this package or have been taken over the years as a result of some of the paperless office kinds of things and other things that have gone on? Have we looked through publishing and distribution to look at those items? There's a lot of things out there that reports that we may not necessarily need to be publishing that we could probably suffice to publish on the web and make 10 copies of them, put them on the shelf, and they would never go out, but we make hundreds and hundreds of copies.
Mr. Chair, Representative Patrice, I want to answer that question, but then I'd like for the state printer to come up and talk about the printing operation. This organization, one of the reasons it's come to our organization is because it's becoming an electronic function. We're getting to the point, and will one day, where you will create an electronic document and it will go through the entire process to mail, being mailed out, and it'll go through a complete electronic process, including put it in the envelope, putting the postage on, and putting it in boxes to go to the post office. And it'll all be done electronically. We now have digital printers in place. We have processes where agencies can actually send the documents electronically. They're set up electronically for the print process and sent on out through the process, folded, put in envelopes, and postage is added. We do have offset presses out there, however, for certain kinds of printing operations that can't be done that way. But we're slowly beginning to move out of that, out of the offset press business. But I think the operation has changed over the years dramatically, and part of that change is due to the work of Mike Fries, who is the state printer. And Mike, I think you ought to come up and talk about some of the things you've done with that, so they understand how the changes are moving along.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mike Fries. I'm a state printer, also a deputy state chief information officer. As John indicated, the publishing and distribution operation, as we call it now, has changed substantially over the years, where we used to be a traditional ink-on-paper type shop. We are migrating out of that kind of production mode, and in fact, our strategic plan calls for the complete elimination of traditional ink-on-paper over the course of the next couple of years and transition to digital print and also to electronic document distribution. What we saw happening with publishing and distribution and the e-government focus, particularly within RMD, is that those two organizations were on a course to either collide or to merge, and by merging we could really move forward the strategic plan of publishing and distribution, which interestingly enough calls for reduction or elimination of unnecessary print and paper. So what we're hoping to be able to do, and in fact we're putting the components in place to do that right now, is to be able to take data, which is what is at the source of every document, whether it's generated off of a desktop or off of a computer system, and currently results in a printed document that gets distributed. We want to be able to redirect that to some kind of electronic medium, whether it will be published on the web or distributed via email. And it's important within state government to be able to do that selectively so that to meet the needs of constituents, some of whom may not have access to electronic media, we may need to print a document for an individual, but the very next document in that stream may be directed to an individual electronically based on their user preferences. That's really where we're going with print in the 21st century. It's really becoming publishing, and paper output is a decreasing portion of what the total volume is there.
Questions for Representative Patrick?
So I know this is budget limitation. It's predominantly what? Other funds and non-limited funds as a result of your budget. So, I mean, there's not a particular amount of general fund savings directly through your piece, but
budget to budget, where are we at with this particular division? What kind of growth rate have we seen? Can we talk a little bit about, you know, I mean, if we get something printed for the legislature, they say it's going to be X amount, and you get a transfer of payment, and that's what gets paid, and I assume that's all in these other funds approach. But can you talk about, and I guess I don't have a comparison budget to budget on your particular division, what it's looked like in the last, you know, 5 or 6 years, because I would think with, you know, all the copy editing and all the various stuff, and you're not cutting and pasting as much anymore, and you're doing it electronically, that, you know, you may not need, looks like a lot of the print shops in my area have really narrowed down their staffing rather substantially. I can send you something now, and you can, you know, I can email it to the print shop myself, and they can print it. And so I guess that's what I'm asking is where are we at FTE-wise, if we can see the glide path in your budget, as well as, you know, as well as maybe some, you know, other just budget-to-budget raw numbers. I appreciate seeing that, because I think that that's something we need to continue to look at.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Representative Pastridge, I can tell you in general that the constituency of the publishing and distribution operation has changed over time. And what we started out back in the mid-90s with between 30 and 40 folks associated with what we call traditional print. That has reduced dramatically, and we're down to about 14 people that are involved in that. At the same time, what we have done over the course of the last 6 years is execute a statewide mail, production mail consolidation plan, and that has resulted, in fact, the Department of Revenue is the last big agency that's involved in that process. What that's allowed us to do is take staff and equipment from multiple state agencies, consolidate them within DAS, and achieve tremendous operational efficiencies, and even more importantly, drive down the cost of postage for outgoing postal mail. We've also done similar things with bringing in some design services and other things. So the division has shifted its the program has shifted its resources over time. It grew substantially with the addition of the production mail staff, which didn't exist before. And then what you'll see happening over time is a reduction in the folks associated with the manufacturing process. And we're already seeing that.
So we will get some information regarding the net cost savings through consolidation, as well as some information about the historical opportunities that there are to save here. Further questions relative to the publishing and distribution?
Chairman, I think it's important to understand also that we're not just printing documents, but we print checks. We have a secure print operation there for printing checks and mailing them. We also do a lot of printing for local governments now, like tax bills and things like that.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Patridge.
But I guess my concern is the things that we're going to continue to, that we need to continue to look at as a state government in terms of where we're going and the direction we're going. And I don't know if you have statutory changes that you guys have proposed, because there's a lot of places in the statute that says you have to print such and such a report or whatever. I don't know if you've culled some of those things. And obviously that's going to be a policy package, another bill that would come here. But are you proposing legislation to do any of those kinds of things? And in addition, you know, every company that I know is trying to get away from printing checks and just go into electronic transfers. We could require that as a state government, that you do that. Now, whether we want to do that or not, I guess is a policy question, but it certainly is a substantial cost savings to any organization that chooses to just say, you know, in order to work for us, you're going to get paid electronically, and that's it.
Mr. Chair, Representative Patridge, a vast majority of state employees are paid electronically. Those checks that we print are checks that go to welfare recipients, that go to, for example, tax refunds and those kinds of things. Being able to get electronic, I mean, you know that you can get your tax refund electronically.
I should get it on Friday.
But you have but not everybody, but not, and that's a choice of the taxpayer. Yet I think we don't feel we need more changes in legislation to do these kinds of things. But again, those are it'd be very difficult, it seems to me, to force a citizen who may not want to have that check electronically deposited, may not have a bank account, to do that. I suppose it could be done.
Well, I guess you.
Please represent that, Patrick.
But for the privilege of working for the state in terms of having a bank account, that is what many, many companies continue to do. And in addition to that, they also allow people to, instead of giving them their own pay stub on a paper form, they allow them to receive it through an email or whatever. If they want to print it, that's great for them. Or they want to check it on the email, that's great for them. But, you know, as we pare down state government, I don't think it's a substantial, in some cases it may be a substantial inconvenience. I don't know. I'm a young guy, and there are some people with grayer and wiser heads on this committee as well.
Mr.
Certainly much grayer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Patrick, just as a note, one of the things that we're doing with the first phase of the e-government program as we implement that is we're working with our largest customer within DAS, which happens to be the State Controller's Division. Also, not coincidentally, happens to be the largest generator of print because they run a large mainframe application that generates both checks, but also a number of mainframe applications, but also generates vast amounts of print. And that's one of the examples where we want to be able to do exactly what you're talking about, taking remittance advices, for instance, and being able to publish those electronically, securely, to the end user and stop that print so we wouldn't be printing and distributing that. Same thing with payroll reports and those kinds of things.
Mr. Chair, Representative Patrick, one of the problems you face is I think that most people don't understand that electronic deposit is as secure, if not more secure, than receiving a paper check. And it's hard for people to understand that. Most of us, very few of our employees I know, don't get their checks electronically deposited. We give out very few paper checks.
Sure. I'd be interested to see if there's just a guesstimate of if we went to all electronic transfer on checks, as well as, well, maybe two components, electronic transfer of check deposits for payroll checks, and as well as requiring vendors to take electronic payment as opposed to check payment as part of sign up for the state. What, if any, would be realized estimated cost savings for the state of Oregon?
That'd be appropriate, and we'll send them back. I know Colleen and Jim are taking all of that down. We'll get that information back.
We're scraping for every dime here, so you know we got to ask the question.
The news gets worse and worse, folks. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you, Mike.
Okay. Now we're on to budget notes. This first budget note was in House Bill 3399, and it enhances IT purchasing process to include consideration of total cost of ownership. And then it encourages vendors to offer innovative and creative solutions to business problems, and a variety of other things. The problem with the bill was that there were some statutory inconsistency that made it very difficult to do. What we did during the interim, our purchasing folks put together a task force, a legislative task force. The legislature worked through this, and it, now you have House Bill 2341 before you that we think will do the things that were anticipated by House Bill 3399. House Bill 3372. This provide a process and information needed to make broad-based technology investment decisions with an enterprise-wide asset management system, full accounting of information technology investments.
And so what we've done is this biennium is we put together a steering committee to begin collecting that basic information to continue to hand, and then we will continue to enhance this as part of our 03-05 goals. This is a major task. It requires a great deal of work with individual agencies to put these things together, creating the database that uses the information and or that holds the information and then the analysis from that. Budget note on Senate Bill 5502. This is the budget note that required us to come back to report about our project management office as we presented this biennium's budget. As you know, successful project management should deliver projects on time within budget, aligned with business goals and program objectives. What we've discovered as we've implemented our project management function is that we have not really had any major IT catastrophes like we have had in previous years. So we think it's working quite well. We're working right now. We have 39 projects that we're working on. The office, which we established in 2001, is fully staffed by certified project managers. It has developed and managed and implemented a project management methodology that complies with the Project Management Institute Guide to Project Management. It follows ISO 9000 and COBIT. Worked closely with the Oregon Project Management Certification Program Advisory Board to promote and implement project management best practices, and also works to create training programs for project managers in state government. Since its inception, the PMO has provided project management oversight for several technology projects. For example, the government project, which is in process and has successfully completed the portal and e-commerce phases, we had project management on that. Oregon Liquor Control Commission Warehouse Automation Project, Public Employees Benefit Board Benefit Management System, State of Oregon Enterprise Network, the SOAN Network, and the contract. A project put together with DAS, ODOT, Department of Human Services, and the Department of Revenue, combined. It was a combined disaster recovery project, and that's in process. And then a project that we did this last summer was create a legislative tracking system for agencies, a web-based legislative tracking system, and that was put together in 6 months, and it is operating now. It's web-based. And I think our ability to get that done was due in large part to the project manager on that project.
That's up and running now, John.
Yes, it is, sir.
Okay.
So, Mr. Chair, that's where we are. We feel that it's been a resounding success. In August 2001, we had an audit to evaluate the processes for providing enterprise-wide policies and procedures governing information technology controls over the system development projects and processes for establishing customer rates to recover costs of providing services. Before I get into these audits, let me explain to you how we in the Department of Administrative Services deal with audits. We have in our division, and I believe in all divisions, someone who's responsible for putting together a tracking sheet for tracking all the recommendations of the audit and then putting together a proposed management plan for mitigating those risks described in the audit. And we go through those and we regularly report to Colleen Seelock on those, how we're doing, what, and as we go through and we check off the where we have managed to successfully mitigate those risks. And it's a very good way to deal with audits, we think. And this audit, we've actually gone through and pretty much complied with all the recommendations in that audit. That happens to be an audit that I signed in my previous job. And as you know, Mr. Chair, I take audits very seriously. So we're working very hard with this process to make sure that we accommodate or we mitigate the risks shown in these audits. In November of of 2001, we had an evaluation of the adequacy of general controls in place at the data center. These controls related to backup, recovery, physical and logical security systems, and the development of activities. We put together a process for mitigating the risks here. We're one of the major kinds of problems we have is in our disaster recovery. We're working with the other major data centers to work through a process to develop a disaster recovery system. We've also hired a security specialist to work with us on security. In March of 2002, this was a follow-up to previous audit regarding policies and procedures to govern use of information technology. And we now have one in process going on as we speak that is a follow-up of the management review.
John, the data center general controls review was instructed as a result of legislation, or is that an ongoing audit issue?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, this is an ongoing process in the audits division to look at controls in all of the data centers and to assess their adequacy and to assess the risk.
This is part also of the disaster recovery process.
I'm sorry.
Is that as a result of the examinations to make sure that in disaster that we can recover from it as well?
That's part of it. It's more than that.
All right.
Oh, I think I've already done that one.
We have to do it. Vacancies.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we have 31 vacancies. 19 of those are in recruitment process. 10 positions are frozen, and 2 positions have been abolished. How would you like me to discuss this, Mr. Chair?
Representative Johnson's recognized. He's helped us in the past to put out the necessary recruitment information, John.
Maybe I could just start with a question. As I understood how the freeze was going to operate, that the only people that would be hired outside of that freeze were in the case of human health and child welfare and those sorts of emergencies. If you've got these 19 in recruitment, I don't see public safety or human health reflected here. How come these got into recruitment?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, we have functions. For example, let me talk about some of these print workers in here. We have functions that are seasonal. For example, when the legislature comes in session, we print the bills. We don't need those people necessarily there to print those bills during the rest of the biennium, but we do need them for the bill printing. So you have those kinds of functions that you can't shut down. For example, you have folks, database administrators or systems administrators in the data center. You can't shut down the data center, or we don't do our accounting, we don't do our payroll. There's a variety of those kinds of positions that are necessary for the basic operation, and if they go away, you have a critical problem in maintaining those functions.
And then the two positions that were abolished, is that a result of the or one of the packages going away, John? Is that what that is?
Those were due. One was due to the a lack of business in systems development. The other was due to reorganization of the data center.
Okay. Further questions? We're scheduled also to take public testimony today. Can we go ahead and do that now, and we'll
continue on. Thank you, John. Thank you, Cora. And let's see. Someone signed up to give public testimony. Or? Please come forward. There's some handout information.
Thank you.
Okay, Debbie?
Good morning, committee. I'm here today to give my public testimony regarding the funding of DAS IRMD. My name is Debbie Ferry. I reside at 296 Richmond Avenue in Salem, and there's my contact information. Today I will be covering three topics. The financial status of the data center in this biennium and next, the IRMD funding requests that John Latimer just went through, and public testimony regarding the state of Oregon's technology funding and leadership, which IRMD is charged with. As I said in my intro, my name is Debbie Ferry. I was the operations manager for 3.5 years in the data center. I was the abolished position that you just saw on page 54, where John Latimer discussed at his reorg. I have extensive experience in information technology chargeback. That's accounting, total cost of ownership, rate modeling, billing, and capacity planning. I was also the author of the multi-agency disaster recovery RFP. I have represented the state of Oregon twice at national conferences on IT chargeback for mainframe chargeback and open systems chargeback. I lived and breathed the data center budget for 6 months of my life, and I know it very well. I also manage the Burns Archive Center, which is a stone's throw away from the correctional institution in Burns, in which we have a contractual relationship with OYA there in Burns to provide maintenance services for the Archive Center. I've been to Burns several times. I know the staff, I know what they do, and I know the business line of Burns very well. I also supported the outsourced line and desktop service lines, which currently is operating in the data center for boards and commissions who cannot support their own basic computing needs, like Department of Aviation, Teacher Standards and Practices, and the newly moved Criminal Justice Commission that's now in the Ag Building, and several other small customers. The General Government Data Center, and yesterday we talked a lot about the state's data network and voice networks. And I got the sense that the committee well understood what that's all about. But I want to talk about the data center and its funding because it is often invisible, black magic, and part of my testimony will help you to understand the business process of database hosting and application hosting, which is critical to the state of Oregon. The General Government Data Center hosts takes care of data that allows almost all state agencies to do accounting, and that's known as the State Financial Management Application. There is also a data mart associated with that, and you might have heard it referred to as the data mart, which allows ad hoc and just-in-time reporting of this accounting data that is hosted on a different platform than the mainframe. We take care of data that will provide the governor's approved budget in an application called Orbitz. Orbitz grabs data from multiple systems, including the mainframe and other Unix-based systems. The Oregon Geospatial Data Clearinghouse, GIS, is also hosted in the data center. We take care of the state employee payroll system, known as OSPA. We also take care of the infamously PERS data. We also host the Oregon's internet portal, known as Oregon.gov. And we also support the Oregon Youth Authority's Juvenile Justice Information System that is transmitted over the state of Oregon's wide area network and is tapped in by counties and local municipalities. We also take care of many small boards and commissions with line and desktop support, small databases, and small applications. Department of Energy is an example, and some smaller databases for Department of Corrections. The data center bills approximately 110 state agencies and municipalities monthly. The general government data center impacts state business every minute of every day of every hour, all the time, right now. I have worked with just about every IRMD staff member, including all the staff behind me. I have worked with agency administrators, IT managers, technical staff at ODOT, Department of Revenue, DHS, and several agencies seeking to purchase services all across IRMD's product lines. And now I will start my outline of the topics I discussed in my introduction. In October of 01, I began a project referred to as the General Government Data Center's Financial Analysis Project, and essentially the job was to answer those four questions. What does it cost the data center to do what it does for 0103 by product line? And the product line concept is based on this. The data center sells mainframe services. The data center sells Unix services. The data center sells Microsoft hosting services. And the data center sells backup and recovery services. And LAN and desktop is also a service. So those are the product lines. And within those product lines are applications and databases. Okay. What does the data center sell? We use a megabytes and minutes model. How many megabytes of disk space do you want, and how many processing cycles of CPU time do you want? That is volume by product line. What does a data center collect in revenue by product line? These same questions were posed for 0305 in addition to the policy option packages, and an increase in sales of mainframe services in addition to open systems customers whose projects were estimated to come on board near the end of the 0103 biennium. In essence, what is the total cost of ownership of each product line, and what are we selling, and how much are we collecting? Real basic business questions. This was done to determine if the rates we were charging by product line were recovering the costs of the product line. All of the above questions were answered, and the detail follows in the appendices. What was discovered in short for 0103 is this. Rates being charged across the board would not recover the cost for services in the data center for 0103 and projected 0305. In January 02, I projected a $6.1 million deficit in the data center. The cost to provide hosting services far exceed the revenue from their sale. Number three, the published rates 0305 substantially increase the mainframe rates that will subsidize the other product lines in the general government data center, meaning PERS and the State Controllers Division, the largest data center customers, the largest mainframe customers, will end up help paying for the other data center's product lines. By basic definition, the general government data center is, was, and is operating in the red, and soon requires subsidies from other sections unless changes could be made in the rate structures. A mainframe rate request was actually developed and proposed, but was not approved, based on the idea that if we jack the rates, that agencies have not budgeted in their 0103 biennium budget to pay for that, which in many cases, I believe the Controllers Division did have the budget to fund a rate increase. How did this occur? The answer is excess capacity. And I'm not talking excess capacity in FTE. I'm talking excess capacity in megabytes and minutes for sale. Excess capacity across all product lines. This means that the data center can host more mainframe applications than it does today. The data center can host more Unix applications than it does today. The data center can host more Microsoft applications than it does today. By a conservative estimate, the general government data center product line is only selling 30% of its capacity. The data center never sells 100% of its capacity because if it bumps up to 100%, then it's out of space. The data center focuses on selling 75 to 80% of its capacity before it considers adding capacity. And the same with the open systems product line, which is the Unix and Microsoft product lines. The Burns Archive Center has extensive capacity, but this is unfunded capacity and requires a more extensive discussion that can be presented here. It is not just noting the total cost of ownership of a single server that's located in some board or some commission or some agency's closet. It is not just knowing the total cost of ownership of a single application or a product line or the entire data center or ODOT's data center or DHS's data center. Information Resource Management Division Executive Manager must consider another measurement, and that is return on investment, ROI. What is the taxpayer's return on the technology investment made by R&B or other technology investments made by state agencies as a whole? Information technology is no different than any other kind of business. It essentially combines the design and implementation of applications to use hardware efficiently and balance the efficiency with features that business owners need and then measuring the capacity that these applications consume. There's also a balancing act in adding capacity in just-in-time increments. The growth curve of adding capacity is stair-stepped. Contrary to common sense, large applications that state agencies depend on and that I referred to as to what the data center hosts and most smaller ones incur fixed expenses that are not sensitive to volume changes. For example, the general government data center and most other large state agencies pay millions of dollars in software and hardware maintenance. GGDC, General Government Data Center, pays the same amount whether we host one application or five or ten or none. Excess capacity exists in the General Government Data Center that is costing millions of dollars to maintain. If you look at all the state agency information technology from a capacity perspective, the state of Oregon is spending millions of dollars in duplication in support of excess capacity. This duplication not exists in maintenance, but in staff and in several other areas. For example, email and calendaring hosting. Every individual agency has hardware, software, and staff to support services, email services. Ever ask how companies like Nike, Intel, or HP do it? DAS Enterprise Network Services Online Services has a technology to support enterprise email and calendaring from state employee web browsers. They're already doing it. Two, database and application hosting. Every state agency, no matter how small, has some database that tracks its business or is part of its business process. It's fundamental to any business operation. Most of these databases are business critical, meaning that the agency would struggle, if not fail, if it lost this data. Most of these databases are similar in nature and could be combined into a similar platform with less hardware and similar application data entry screens. Today, hardware proliferates like rabbits. It takes staff to support this proliferation on multiple levels. It takes staff to maintain this hardware, develop the application, back up the data, and ensure the validity and reliability of the data, not to mention the overhead of supporting this duplication of effort. This duplication is replicated over and over. Printing. High-speed printers are critical to print income tax information, car and driver license renewals, registration, letters to clients for all DHS services, court documents, etc. Paper is mailed to citizens from basically birth to death. DAS Publishing and Distribution, DHS, ODOT, and the data center are all in the printing business. Have printers in which most cases the costs are not volume driven. Each of these agencies has the ability to send this data to publishing and distribution over the state's wide area network. But that's not what is happening. Each of these agencies has lease payments, maintenance, toner, paper storage, and FTE to load and remove print jobs from printers, plus mail service to pick up this print and get it to where it needs to be. Large data centers, DAS, DHS, and ODOT, all use the same vendors, similar hardware, similar FTE, similar information technology infrastructure, and duplication exists at the very lowest levels. Why can't these resources be shared? Why can't capacity be combined? And why are millions of dollars being expended to pay for excess? For example, timesheets. The data center used to print the triplicate form timesheets that state employees would use to enter their time. Due to the failure of our impact printer, ODOT now prints those timesheets, which is a good use of ODOT's printing resource. Several state employees fill out paper timesheets, which are then manually entered by another payroll clerk. State employees have access to enter their time electronically, and they do not do that. And there's a duplication, a very simplistic duplication of effort. As we just talked about this morning, direct deposit. Several agencies still get checks and do not utilize direct deposit, and I believe the percentage is around in the high 70s of state employees who do get direct deposit. The timesheets and how people's time gets into the system is where a lot of duplication exists. The costs to run the data center are approximately 95% fixed and are not dependent on volumes. The data center is in a catch-22 position, has to continue to pay for excess capacity, but cannot raise its rates to cover the cost because the rates are not competitive for agencies, so therefore cannot attract customers to use this capacity. This has been demonstrated with Oregon Health Sciences University when I tried to get them to back up their DNA data to Burns. But after a cost review, they found that they could do it for several percentages cheaper than we would charge them. Within DAS alone, there's duplication of capacity in hosting and in application development. DAS, Office of Information Technology, hosts and does Unix and Microsoft operating systems development. That is database development and application development. The same thing that systems development does and the same thing that the data center does. DAS Network Communication Section hosts approximately 120 state agency web pages and other applications that run on Unix hardware, the same hardware that the data center has. How does the leadership of IRMD expect agencies to follow if DAS cannot follow its own policies? How does the leadership of IRMD expect agencies to follow if they cannot provide the role model of standards, the role model of coordination, and more importantly, the role model of reduction and duplication? The era of do as I say and not as I do must come to an end. The era of unjustified IT funds requests must be carefully scrutinized, including IRMD, who's in charge with IT leadership. Section 2, IRMD funding request. The state has an extensive data transmission network, just as the city of Salem has an extensive water and sewer line infrastructure, which is critical to Oregon's economic development. The value of data and voice network is only as valuable, though, as the data that travels across it. How valuable would the statewide network be without data or voice being transmitted along it? How valuable would the data sitting on state agency hard drives, large and small, without database administration and application development, writing the code and creating table structures to store, enter, and edit, and add data? How valuable is the data if you cannot access it by those who need it to operate their business? And lastly, how valuable is the data if it's lost through natural or man-made disasters? The value of the State of Oregon's IT assets is created by several dedicated staff who add value to this data along the continuum of technology services. IRMD provides a continuum of technology services. In looking at the IRMD budget and policy action package, I urge encourage the committee to look at the following issues and demand accountability in IRMD's request for funding. How much of IRMD's base budget will be spent on supporting this excess capacity? What has the taxpayer received for its investment in e-government over the last 18 months? Oregon.gov, known as the portal, is still being hosted on the same hardware that it was put on when it went live in October of 2001. Where is the business plan, technology strategy, and funding proposal for e-government? What happened to the hardware that was purchased for e-government in the 99-01 biennium? Is it being used for e-government today? No, it's not. Is POP 341 adding more capacity to the data center that will increase fixed expenditures without secure revenue stream? The data center operates on a fee-for-service basis. Where are the dollars being spent for e-procurement? Is this startup capital, or is this going to be adding capacity to the data center? Is more capacity going to be added? Where are these dollars going? What are they for? In POP 450, what technology investments are going to be made? What is the return on investment, and how long will this return when will this return be materialized? Is there a business plan, a strategy, a funding plan with cost recovery included? The technology lab is in a separate room in the data center, a physically separate locked door room. The data center uses a smart three-tiered process in its business model to host customer work. Projects like e-procurement, e-government, PEB's budget management system, and Parks and Rec's new online financial transaction system all would knock on the data center door for service. And the process in which these customers are served is very simple. Most of these large applications start out in a test environment that is in a totally separate network and where people can take down servers and build applications and build databases and make it work. After it's tested and there's buy-off and approval by business owners, that is moved to what's called a test environment. First there's development and then there's test. Get those backwards. Okay. Testing is, a lot of it is quality assurance, and most of the time the test environment is very close to the production environment. The test environment is also generally on its own network and is separate from development and is separate from production. When there's buy-off and the business owners agree and things to be working, then the application rolls to production, hence going live. Again, production is on a separate network. It's separately supported. All of these environments exist in all the product lines in the data center right now. And it is smart IT sense to do it that way. Publishing and distribution coordination in IRMD. Where's the business plan? Where's the technology strategy? And where's the funding proposal for this consolidation? I, too, had the same questions when I was asked to participate on this merger committee. Just because you can't combine two sections doesn't mean that you should. What are the performance criteria for success? What are the dollar savings? How will they be achieved? And when will we see them? What is being leveraged with the merger that cannot be gained without the merger? Are the use of profits to cover IRMD losses and vacant positions is that what the merger is going to do for IRMD? Electronic distribution of documents shifts the responsibility from printing and insertion machines to the state's wide area network and hardware and software. That data has to travel somewhere, and those pages and those checks and those things have to be stored somewhere. I would hate to see the same people coming to you asking for money now for more infrastructure for electronic data processing, even though I 100% agree that's where it needs to go. There is no proposal. There is no strategy fully developed with cost recovery to do this. Each of the goals outlined in John Latimer's presentations has dollars behind them, some small and some large. What are the dollars associated with accomplishing these goals as outlined? State of Oregon Information Technology Funding and Leadership. It will be extremely important for the committee to consider how information technologies of all state Oregon agencies are supported, purchased, used, and managed. It is important to consider the framework in which IT budgets are presented. State agency IT organizations are just as decentralized as agency mission and agency operations. Oregon is years behind the state of Washington in the development and use of the Internet to bring citizens, business, and all municipalities and agencies into an e-commerce and economic partnership to bring services to citizens and business and economic to development to the state of Oregon. Decentralized information technology budgets rise the cost of total cost of ownership and slow down and lower the return on investment from such investments at the state of Oregon enterprise level. IT management around the state must focus on consolidation, must focus on reduction of duplication, and the only way this is going to happen is with IT leadership to do it. Potentially, it is time for reorganization of IT across the board. Potentially, it is time to address how the state of Oregon technology investments are managed and provided and determine if the current structure works. It is time to question if IRMD should have the statute-based authority to do what it's doing beyond providing technology services such as the data center, such as the wide area network, online services, systems development consulting. Is IRMD the appropriate entity in which should be providing IT leadership? DAS-IMD has some of the most talented, gifted, dedicated staff found in any organization on the planet. Just as any organization whose IT staff every day ensure that data is available for business and state agencies across the state, emails available, internet access is present, and payroll and accounting transactions can be entered. It is not magic that this occurs. It is staff who most often stake their personal credibility on the availability of their network, on the availability of the data, and the creation and access to that data. All great staff need and deserve leadership. In this case, it is the state of Oregon that needs leadership in the funding of IT. More of the same is just going to bring agencies asking for more and more IT dollars. The appendices list out the data center financials, and I would briefly like to go through these. The first attachment is a historical perspective of the general data center's build-out revenue for the 2001-03 biennium, broken out by service line or product line, as I refer to it. The first column, 4240, is the mainframe service line. The next one is the Unix service line. The next one is the Microsoft service line. And 4250 is the Burns service line. I put a box around the 0103. And one of the things that's very apparent in this is that the amount of revenue that the data center is collecting has substantially been declining over the months of this biennium. And I will discuss why that has occurred. Okay. And there are some notes, footnotes that I have put. The next page lists out some of the large customers of the data center. And the first one is the top five customers in total by total build-out revenue. Controllers Division, we are our own largest customer as well. Oregon Youth Authority, PERS, and Budget and Management. Then you have the top mainframe customers, no secret, Controllers Division and PERS. IRMD is it's also its own largest customer. ODOT, which purchases disk space from us and they from the data center is in fixed amounts. They self-manage the disk space that is sold to them and Oregon Youth Authority. Open Systems, Controllers Division, and that is because of the Data Mart. Budget Management because of Orbitz. OYA because of JGIS. IRMD, again, because of voice services, hosting voice services work order system. And Department of Ag, which is their Data Mart usage. Microsoft and Lana Desktop, which is combined, you're seeing facilities there as the top one, which is an anomaly because when I pulled the data in September of 2002, facilities paid for the consolidation of the criminal justice into the Ag building. So they flipped that bill. So, and actually, aviation is probably the largest Lana Desktop customer, and energy and dispute resolution are large Microsoft database and application customers. Burns, it's misleading here because I took the data center out, but the data center is actually Burns' largest customer. Employment being second, DAS, Office of Information Technology, and in that order. Again, the next page is really just a reiteration of the charts of the top five customers and the top five mainframe customers. Again, Controllers Division, IRMD, 415, Agency 415 is OYA, 459 is PERS, and 10702 is Budget Management. I provided some charts on the next thing to kind of give you an example and explain why the data centers, at least from a mainframe perspective, revenue is going down. And it's also important for you to understand some of the business cycles of the customers that the data center hosts. The first chart that I've given you is PERS mainframe billing. One of the first things that occurred in June of 2000 when Don Mazziotti was CIO is that the data center dropped its batch processing rate 60%. The biggest consumers of batch processing, Controllers Division and PERS, which that immediately dropped PERS and Controllers Divisions, what we billed them. Then, with the implementation of new rates at the beginning of this biennium, there was another 60% discount in rates. And so what you're seeing in the PERS chart is not only the cyclical nature of when they're doing most of their work based on their bills, but you're also seeing the impact of rate reductions. There's two ways to become more efficient in IT. One way is to develop your applications and your databases to run efficiently with the given hardware and software that you have. And that's what some of what PERS has done. The other way is simply to buy bigger, faster equipment running the same applications. PERS is one of those agencies that has done some work on doing things more efficiently so that their bills would go down. But they've also been facilitated with their bills going down by the data center's dropping of rates. Controllers Division, by far the largest data center customer. The dark bars show what they were actually billed. And you can see over time that there is relative stability in what they're billed. But because the data center did volume discounts in the 9901 biennium, the actual amount Controllers Division was billed is actually kind of skewed, because what they were billed is gross by the gray shaded bars, but actually what they consumed was based on the gray, on the shaded bars, but actually what they were billed is the dark bars. And you can see by just watching the bars that generally the Controllers Division has benefited substantially from the reduction in the data center rate. There's two issues here that point to these charts. One is the State Controllers Division, with the help of System Consulting, also did work to have their tables become more efficient in their run and applications to become more efficient. But the other thing that happened was the data center purchased a new mainframe, bigger, faster, which ran the same work faster. So the same payroll check process or month-end process to process accounting data now ran faster, therefore consuming less CPU minutes. So the combination of lowering rates and a new, bigger, faster box with some application changes lowered Controllers Division's bill, therefore lowering the revenue that the data center collected. The issue, though, is that being that most state agencies create their budgets 18 months to 2 years prior before they extend the money, based on the history of what Controllers Division was actually billed, it looks like they would have budgeted substantially more money in 2001-03 than they were actually billed for. And this is the next sheet shows in a numerical outline how those have occurred, which 10703 is Controllers Division and 459 is PERS. So you can see over time that the amount billed to Controllers Division has gradually declined based on those three conditions: bigger, faster mainframe, cheaper rates, and more efficient development and restructuring of cables.
President Patrick?
David, but were there other clients that came on board? Or, I mean, what justified the purchase of the hardware? Do you have any idea one way or the other?
The justification of the purchase of the hardware, the idea was that we were going to go to the IBM's new operating system, which to my understanding has not occurred as yet.
Okay.
And it is also my understanding that a new mainframe is also on the schedule to be purchased in 0305 to go from, and I'm going to use a geek term here, a 32-bit operating system to a 64-bit operating system. So the same jobs that the Controller Division runs today will run even faster. Okay. The budget details now, just to give you a little background on the General Government Data Center's budget. These documents were produced approximately 14 months ago during the initial October 01 thing. And what I did was project the revenue that the data center would collect given consistent volumes across all product lines. And this first page is actually a summary. And if you look at the delta between actual cost and real revenue, that is billed out revenue, there is the $6.1 million deficit. There, the rate proposal that was proposed to be implemented in April of 2002 was our way that we would try to recover that. And then you're seeing the last column of the delta is the effect of that rate increase. which would actually balance out the general government data center's budget. But you can see that PCA, for example, 4220, which is the mainframe PCA, ends up subsidizing the open systems PCAs, which is the Unix and Microsoft environments. It is also misleading here to look at 4250 as being in a break-even mode, because it is actually not. In July 1 of 2002, the mainframe rate was cut in half for burn. I mean, the burn's backup and recovery rate was cut in half.
4250 was burns?
It's burns. And, in fact, if you go back and look at that very first example, if you look at 4250 for burns revenue, in March of 2001, the data center billed out $90,000 in for burns revenue, and in September of 2002, it billed out $34,000. There is no way that burns is anywhere close to cost recovery. And I could go further into burns, but that's a whole separate discussion. So I don't want to. I know exactly why that has occurred. So the next page in the budget is just the extrapolation out for the rest of the months in the 0103 biennium. The good news is the projected revenue that I projected for mainframe services was pretty close. The revenue that was projected for open systems and the other one was way off. So it is my understanding that the delta of 6.1 is even wider now. The next thing that you're seeing is basically the PCA summary of costs. What does it cost to provide mainframe services? And that's the summary here, where 14 months ago I projected that it would cost a little over $17 million to fund the data center for 0103. Then what you're seeing is a breakdown of each of those product lines. Now, this is not the traditional SFMS breakdown of accounting costs. This is how, make it real simple, and how IT business people think of their expenditures. To filter this level of detail out of SFMA would be a challenge, at least. And this is a format that I have given to ODOT to manage its. This is also the format that I gave to Oregon Health Sciences University to justify what they're spending in their own local backup of their own data on the Oregon Health Sciences University campus. As you can see from even looking at the mainframe PCA 4220, one of the largest expenditures is software maintenance. Software maintenance is a fixed cost. It is not dependent on volumes. What you're seeing there is we do not charge customers for the pickup of depreciation. So that's why you have the column and then you have the little box that looks somewhat shaded, which is depreciation taken out. Each of the methodology used to spread the cost of overhead, disaster recovery, and security is very basic, and that is taking the total cost of the product line and then the total cost of overhead disaster recovery and assigning a percentage based on their aggregate of the whole, so that each product line picks up a piece of the overhead disaster recovery and security cap. So just fundamentally, to sell mainframe services for 0103, I projected that it with depreciation is $8.4 million, with depreciation out, $8.2 became the fundamental basis for which the rate would be developed, because that's depreciation out. The next page is the Unix, and this is where Oregon.gov is hosted, this is where Orbitz is hosted, and this is where JGIS is hosted. Again, software maintenance, FTE, are large costs. And again, this information is 14 months old. You can see by the depreciation numbers that depreciation number is relatively large. That's because the data center has a lot of Unix servers and a lot of excess capacity. It's important to understand the business model in which IT projects occur in the data center. To say that there's an FTE, that we have FTE We have no FTE. The data center has no FTE capacity. It's somewhat true, but it is somewhat false. In that, in the example that I gave you where a project comes in development, it rolls to test, and it eventually rolls to production, those are all stages that are, that this project goes through. And you might say there's a ramp-up, there's work, there's transition, and then when an application rolls to production, it's like we wave goodbye until the business owner says, I need a change. It's not like it's, there's constant people working on that constant application every day, 7 days a week, 24/7. There's initial work on the ramp-up. The curve somewhat looks like this. Ramp-up until the next change. Okay? So during those ramp-ups, yeah, I could definitely say there would probably be an FTE shortage. But after that application goes production, that group of people is off on the next project, and that cycle continues over and over and over. And if you'd like to see an example, you can look at JGIS, because the people at OIA actually do the application development, and they pass the new application upgrade to us. Okay, and that's the example of a ramp-up and an application change that has a successful history. The other thing that you're seeing is the Windows platform. And then 4250s, I actually kind of do want to spend a little bit of time on that because I want to point something out. The cost of burns is the data line. There is a fat bandwidth going out from Salem to Portland to Bend to Burns. And that data line is a lease line that network services manage. The data center only uses a small portion of that. The cost of that data line to the data center is approximately $15,000 to $17,000 a month in which network services bills the data center. The cost of that line in total is probably closer to $37,000 a month to lease that line. There is lots of capacity on that data line that is unused. It's unused because state agencies don't use burns to the level that they could for multiple reasons. One thing is the prices are out, even at $16 a gig, which is half of the rate that it was a year ago. It is still expensive. Again, there's a lot of discussion that occurred with burns as far as its business model and its capacity and its FTE support. I will say there is tremendous potential for burns, but that needs to be have a business plan, have a technology strategy, and a cost recovery strategy that has never been developed, even when the site went live in February of 99. The work to make it a viable option for state agencies has never been developed. And that's why it is clearly in the red today. E-government was pulled out of the Unix because the data center does a lot of work for e-government and will continue to do so. And so the data center doesn't really bill e-government for its work. It's kind of one of those internal things. But the data center expends resources to support the portal and support the applications, but doesn't necessarily see that revenue on its bottom line. And LAN and desktop services. LAN and desktop services here is outsourced. Almost all the customers are agencies with staffs of 25 or less. It's a very stable, and I see that as a potential growth area because I know there are several boards and commissions who do not have the technology resources at a very basic level to do what they need to do to support their customer base. Whether GAS IRMD is the appropriate place for that isn't unknown. We also have security. That is security and network security within the general government data center's networks. This is not paying for wide area networking services. This is the firewalls that protect all of the different networks that support development, test, and the production networks. and some of the FTE to do this. I should say that of the 40-some positions of FTE, FTE is spread across here. It's not like I took one FTE and said, this is a mainframe person only. You might have a mainframe person who also does security as well. So you need, I didn't provide the detail here, but actually I tried to be very nitty-gritty on, and with the help of the other people in data center, figuring out how to spread those FTE costs so they're appropriately spread. Overhead was one of the spreadables, and overhead was basically defined as costs that we could not directly associate with a particular product line. Things like a help desk or billing application that allows us to print a paper invoice and to have our invoice have an electronic interface into the state's financial management system. The data center does the billing for the project management office as well as systems development consulting. And so you're seeing here is some of the overhead expenses for the data center. Overhead is a substantial part of the data center's budget. Disaster recovery is listed here, but I'm sure the numbers are somewhat overstated, being that the data center does not have a disaster recovery plan nor a disaster recovery vendor right now that would protect the state's assets within the revenue building or the ones at the employment building. This is one of the major areas of risk that the state is incurring, is disaster recovery. A lot of IT resources right now are in the revenue building. You have the ODOT data center. You have the general government data center. You have revenues data center, as well as the hub of the network operations center there. Anything happens to the revenue building and state business would come to a screeching halt relatively quick. I know that network operations center has tried to build some redundancy over in the employment building, but still today, a meteor drops on the revenue building and it would not be fun. The same methodology was used to prepare the 0305 budget details. And the rates that are actually published for your 0305 are actually reflected here. And given the volumes that were projected, which is a 10% increase in mainframe services, basically any known customers coming on board in the open systems platform and probably overstated volume on the Burns product line, there is a substantial increase in the mainframe rates between this biennium and next. Those mainframe rates, though, are not to the same level that they were in the 9901. Not all of them.
Patrick is recognized. Excuse me, Debbie.
Thanks. I can look at these other rates based upon what you've told us, and you've given us your contact information to ask questions. I guess with the time, I mean, our time is quickly running out, so I guess what I'm asking is, I missed the first part of your presentation, I apologize, but can you bottom line for us what recommendations you're kind of...
My recommendation to you is that you look at every single funding proposal that was presented in John Latimer's testimony. You look at the goals, and you say, what is this going to cost? Is excess capacity going to be added to the data center from a hardware and software perspective? I hope that you understand a little bit more about the process in which work comes into the data center and the business model process of IT, because it is no different in the data center than it is at ODOT and revenue or anywhere. Asking good questions is the way that you're going to get to the detail that you need.
And it's obvious that we do need to ask good questions, and we appreciate your information, Debbie. Are there other questions that any of you have for Debbie at this time? We are running short of time. Debbie, we've got your contact information. Thank you very much for preparing this information for us and going through the details of the work that you've done. Are there any other matters of business we need to cover today? I think we're still just one half of a day behind. The good news is that we've got rooms coming that will help us be able to hold meetings, I understand, legal meetings by the end of this week. Is that your understanding, Senator Devlin?
As of yesterday.
All right. There is some fluidity. I understand. With that, we'll stand adjourned until evening time tomorrow.